You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on The Creative Habit. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on The Creative Habit. Learn it and use it for life by Twyla Tharp. As always, we're going to kick it off with a quote. I will keep stressing the point about creativity being augmented by routine and habit. Get used to it. In these pages, a philosophical tug of war will periodically rear its head. It is the perennial debate born in the Romantic era between the beliefs that all creative acts are born of A, some transcendent, inexplicable act of inspiration, a kiss from God on your brow that allows you to give the world the magic flute, or B, hard work. If it isn't obvious already, I come down on the side of hard work. That's why this book is called The Creative Habit. Creativity is a habit, and the best creativity is a result of good work habits. That's it in a nutshell. End quote. That is Twyla Tharp from The Creative Habit. Twyla Tharp is awesome. One of the greatest choreographers in the world, she's created more than 130 dances for her company, as well as for everyone from the Joffrey Ballet to London's Royal Ballet. In this great book, Twyla shares some uber big ideas on how we can develop our creative habit to more consistently rock it. Hope you enjoy a few of my favorites. Let's jump in with the first big idea, rituals of preparation. Quote, more than anything, this book is about preparation. In order to be creative, you have to know how to prepare to be creative. No one can give you your subject matter, your creative content. If they could, it would be their creation, not yours. But there's a process that generates creativity, and you can learn it, and you can make it habitual. End quote. I just love Tharp's intensity. How's this for a ritual of preparation? She says, quote, I begin each day of my life with a ritual. I wake up at 5:30 a.m., put on my workout clothes, my leg warmers, my sweatshirts, and my hat. I walk outside my Manhattan home, hail a taxi, and tell the driver to take me to the Pumping Iron Gym at 91st Street and 1st Avenue, where I work out for 2 hours. The ritual is not the stretching and weight training I put my body through each morning at the gym. The ritual is the cab. The moment I tell the driver where to go, I have completed the ritual. End quote. Powerful. What are your rituals? Mine? As I've mentioned a number of times, I'm all about rising with the sun, meditating for 30 minutes, journaling, moving, eating by 8 a.m., and creating. For the record, although I haven't missed a day of meditation in 2.5+ years, or a day of exercise in months, the rest of those fundamentals have been way less consistent than I like over the last couple of weeks. And my overall mojo, creative and otherwise, reflects it. Now, I'd like to blame this issue on our move from Ecuador back to LA, but alas, it really doesn't have that much to do with it. Dope. Writes note to self, get it on, yo. What are your rituals of preparation you need to make sure you really honor consistently? Think about that. As we move into the next big idea, Mozart's genius, in quotes, equals discipline plus work ethic. Quote, nobody worked harder than Mozart. By the time he was 28 years old, his hands were deformed because of all the hours he had spent practicing, performing, and gripping a quill pen to compose. That's the missing element in the popular portrait of Mozart. Certainly, he had a gift that set him apart from others. He was the most complete musician imaginable, one who wrote for all instruments in all combinations, and no one has written greater music for the human voice. Still, few people, even those hugely gifted, are capable of the application and focus that Mozart displayed throughout his short life. As Mozart himself wrote to a friend, "People err who think my art comes easily to me. I assure you, dear friend, nobody has devoted so much time and thought to composition as I. There is not a famous master whose music I have not industriously studied through many times." Mozart's focus was fierce. It had to be for him to deliver the music he did in his relatively short life, under the conditions he endured, writing in coaches and delivering scores just before a curtain went up, dealing with the distractions of raising a family and the constant need for money. Whatever scope and grandeur you attach to Mozart's musical gift, his so-called genius, his discipline and work ethic were its equal. End quote. That is the Mozart myth. We've talked about it in a few of our notes on creative genius, and I think it's a very good idea to keep on coming back to it, given the fact Mozart is often believed to be the poster child for natural or born geniuses. Yeah, right, not so much. I love the way Carol Dweck, one of the world's leading researchers on motivation, puts it in her genius book, Mindset, see those notes, where she asks, quote, is it ability or mindset? Was it Mozart's musical ability or the fact that he worked till his hands were deformed? Was it Darwin's scientific ability or the fact that he collected specimens nonstop from early childhood? End quote. In case you're wondering, the correct answers are, it was Mozart's incredible work ethic, and it was Darwin's lifelong commitment to collecting specimens. Wink. Now, in his equally awesome book, Talent is Overrated, see those notes, Jeff Colvin tells us, Mozart's first work regarded today as a masterpiece, with its status confirmed by the number of recordings available, is his Piano Concerto No. 9, composed when he was 21. That's certainly an early age, but we must remember that by then Wolfgang had been through 18 years of extremely hard expert training. Colvin offers this tip for parents as well. He says, quote, the New Yorker's music critic Alex Ross sums up much of the recent scholarship on the Miracle of Salzburg. He says, quote, ambitious parents who are currently playing the Baby Mozart video for their toddlers may be disappointed to learn that Mozart became Mozart by working furiously hard. End quote. And Michelangelo's perspective on this seems appropriate here as well. He says, quote, if people knew how hard I had to work to gain my mastery, it would not seem so wonderful at all. End quote. So, let's remember that the equation for Mozart's genius was not birth to genius. It was birth to decades of extremely hard work leading to mangled hands to genius. P.S. How about one more blurb from Tharp on this? She says, quote, even Mozart, with all his innate gifts, his passion for music and his father's devoted tutelage, needed to get 24 youthful symphonies under his belt before he composed something enduring with number 25. If art is the bridge between what you see in your mind and what the world sees, then skill is how you build that bridge, end quote. Next big idea is give me 1 week without. Quote, people go on diets all the time. If they don't like their weight, they stop eating certain foods. If their spending is out of control, they lock away their credit cards. If they need quiet time at home, they take the phone off the hook. These are all diets of one kind or another. Why not do the same for your creative health? Take a week off from clutter and distractions, end quote. Love it. Tharp suggests a range of distractions from which we can choose to diet, including mirrors, watches, newspapers, TV, the coffee shop, etc. I'm personally dieting from ESPN 2+ months in, go me. In the news, I had swapped my fasting from ESPN with feasting on general news, dope. So those are my current give me 1 week without, a little longer for the ESPN. How about you? What could you afford to trim back from in your life for a little bit? Think about that. Give me 1 week without what? What is it for you? As you think about that, we'll move on to the next big idea. Get busy copying. Quote, if there's a lesson here, it's get busy copying. That's not a popular notion today. Not when we are all instructed to find our own way, admonished to be original, and find our own voice at all costs. But it's sound advice. Traveling the paths of greatness, even in someone else's footprints, is a vital means to acquire skill. End quote. Copying the greats. Tharp goes off on the power of copying masters and gives a number of examples of great writers who, early in their careers, literally copied artists they thought were great. Reminds me of Bruce Lee and Kobe Bryant. Before Bruce Lee developed his own style, he mastered a number of arts. Didn't dabble with, but mastered. While Kobe Bryant, arguably one of the greatest basketball players ever, often describes about how he'd love to watch tapes of the old greats and try to copy their signature moves. I'm laughing at the fact that this is obviously essentially what I'm doing with these notes, literally copying quote after quote and getting a deeper and deeper feel for what the greats have said across the ages as I develop my own approach to life. How about you? What masters can you get busy copying? Get on that. That leads us to the next big idea, reading. It does a mind good. Quote, if I stopped reading, I'd stop thinking. It's that simple. End quote. Love that. Reminds me of Confucius's quip. See the notes on the Analects, where he says, quote, those who do not study are only cattle dressed up in men's clothes. Also reminds me of Joseph Campbell's brilliant line from Pathways to Bliss. Check out those notes where he says, "For myself, well, Alan Watts once asked me what spiritual practice I followed. I told him, I underline books. It's all in how you approach it," end quote. And how about a little more love from Twyla on how she rocks it? She tells us, quote, "When I'm reading archaeologically, I'm not reading for pleasure. I read the way I scratch for an idea, digging down deep so I can get something out of it and use it in my work. I read transactionally. How can I use this? It's not enough for me to read a book. I have to own it. I scribble in the margins. I circle sentences I like and connect them with arrows to other useful sentences. I draw stars and exclamation points on every good page to the point where the book is almost unreadable. By writing all over the pages, I transform the author's work into my book and mine alone," end quote. Genius. That's pretty much how I read as well. Literally hunting for big ideas I can share with you in these notes as I asterisk and exclamation point and underline the heck out of the great parts. On that note, you might dig a little YouTube video I did on how I read a book. You can click in the PDF. I've got a little link to it. Or you can Google Philosopher's Notes plus YouTube plus how I read a book. And you'll be able to find my little YouTube clip on that. Back to you again. Are you reading and studying? Get on that. Don't be cattle dressed up in clothes. Gotta study. It does your mind good. Next big idea is stimulate your body and your mind. Quote, "I can't say enough about the connection between body and mind. When you stimulate your body, your brain comes alive in ways you can't simulate in a sedentary position. The brain is an organ tied integrally to all the other systems in the body, and it's affected by blood flow, neural transmission, all the processes you undergo when you put your body through its paces," end quote. As you know, if you've read many of these notes, I'm a huge fan of movement and exercise to aid both creativity and overall well-being. I'll repeat, not exercising is like taking a depressant, as per Tal Ben-Shahar. John Rady, MD, puts it brilliantly in his great book, Spark. See the notes on that, please. Where he tells us, quote, "To keep our brains at peak performance, our bodies need to work hard. In Spark, I'll demonstrate how and why physical activity is crucial to the way we think and feel. I'll explain the science of how exercise cues the building blocks of learning in the brain, how it affects mood, anxiety, and attention, how it guards against stress and reverses some of the effects of aging in the brain, and how in women it can help stave off the sometimes tumultuous effects of hormonal changes. I'm not talking about the fuzzy notion of a runner's high. I'm not talking about a notion at all. These are all tangible changes, measured in lab rats and identified in people," end quote. So this isn't a maybe it helps kind of thing. It's a scientific fact. As Sonia Lyubomirsky tells us in The How of Happiness, see those notes, I've quoted this a million times, no one in our society needs to be told that exercise is good for us. Whether you are overweight or have a chronic illness or are a slim couch potato, you've probably heard or read this dictum countless times throughout your life. But has anyone told you, indeed guaranteed you, that regular physical activity will make you happier? I swear by it, end quote. So back to you. Are you exercising enough? If so, sweet. If not, get on that. Pretty please. Thank you. Next big idea is prepare to be lucky. Quote, "Habitually creative people are," in E.B. White's phrase, "prepared to be lucky." The key words here are prepared and lucky. They're inseparable. You don't get lucky without preparation, and there's no sense in being prepared if you're not open to the possibility of a glorious accident, end quote. Luck, that wonderful location at the crossroads of preparation and good fortune. I can't think of the word without thinking of Thomas Jefferson's mojo. He says, quote, "I find that the harder I work, the more luck I seem to have," end quote. So, are you working hard and preparing to be lucky, or just buying lottery tickets? P.S. Twyla adds, quote, "Being prepared for luck is like getting a voice message that tells you something good may happen to you between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. today. Make sure you're at your desk or in your studio or office or at your laboratory bench working, and keep your eyes open for it." Plus, she tells us, quote, "Woody Allen said that 80% of success in show business is showing up. It's the same thing with luck. 80% of it is just showing up to see it," end quote. All right, we've got two more big ideas here. The next one is perfect practice makes perfect. Quote, "Confidence is a trait that has to be earned honestly and refreshed constantly. You have to work as hard to protect your skills as you did to develop them. This means vigilant practice and excellent practice habits. You've heard the phrase, practice makes perfect? Not true. Perfect practice makes perfect. The one thing that creative souls around the world have in common is that they all have to practice to maintain their skills. Art is a vast democracy of habit. End quote. There's a lot of goodness there. First, the poetic, art is a vast democracy of habit. Love that. And reminds me of Eric Butterworth's genius goodness on practice from his brilliant Spiritual Economics, see those notes, where he tells us, quote, ask the great athlete or the concert pianist or the successful actor if they arrived at the place where they need no further practice. They will tell you that the higher you climb in proficiency and public acceptance, the greater the need for practice, end quote. And in his great book, The Talent Code, see those notes, Daniel Coyle takes it all a step further and tells us, quote, to sum up, it's time to rewrite the maxim that practice makes perfect. The truth is, practice makes myelin, and myelin makes perfect, end quote. So check out the notes for more goodness on myelin and how that's formed in your brain when you practice. And know that, again, it's not any kind of practice. It's what he calls deep practice. In Coyle's words, quote, deep practice is built on a paradox, struggling in certain targeted ways, operating at the edges of your ability, where you make mistakes, makes you smarter. Or to put it a slightly different way, experiences where you're forced to slow down, make errors, and correct them, as you would if you were walking up an ice-covered hill, slipping and stumbling as you go, end up making you swift and graceful without you realizing it. End quote. So are you practicing deeply and perfectly? Get on that. Push your edges. Practice, practice, practice. That leads us to the final big idea, passion plus skill. Quote, without passion, all the skill in the world won't lift you above craft. Without skill, all the passion in the world will leave you eager but floundering. Combining the two is the essence of the creative life. End quote. Amen to that. And as it turns out, that's pretty much exactly what Sir Ken Robinson tells us in his great book, The Element, see those notes, where he tells us, quote, my aim in writing this book is to offer a richer version of human ability and creativity and of the benefits to us all of connecting properly with our individual talents and passions. This book is about issues that are of fundamental importance in our lives and in the lives of our children, our students, and the people we work with. I use the term the element to describe the place where the things we love to do and the things we are good at come together. I believe it is essential that each of us find his or her element, not simply because it will make us more fulfilled, but because as the world evolves, the very future of our communities and institutions will depend on it. End quote. The element. Powerful stuff. So where do your passion and skill meet? How can you rock your element a little or perhaps a lot more? Here's to developing the creative habit of rocking it. Well, there you go. That's a quick look at this great book, The Creative Habit. Let's look into Twyla Tharp's mini-bio a little more. I'll suggest a few other notes you might like on creativity, and then we'll go through a couple of great quotes in the sidebar and call it a day. First, Twyla Tharp, one of America's greatest choreographers, began her career in 1965 and has created more than 130 dances for her company, as well as for the Joffrey Ballet, the New York City Ballet, Paris Opera Ballet, London's Royal Ballet, and American Ballet Theater. That's from Barnes & Noble. If you like this note and you're into mastering creativity, you'll probably also really like the notes on The War of Art, The Element, The Talent Code, Spark, Mastery, and Constructive Living. And now for some great quotes from the sidebar. Twyla tells us, it's vital to establish some rituals, automatic but decisive patterns of behavior. At the beginning of the creative process, when you are most at peril of turning back, chickening out, giving up, or going the wrong way. She also tells us, there are no natural geniuses. And the great ones never take fundamentals for granted. She says, no matter what system you use, I recommend having a goal and putting it in writing. She says, quote, as Freud said, quote, when inspiration does not come to me, I go halfway to meet it. Twyla tells us, solitude is an unavoidable part of creativity. Self-reliance is a happy byproduct. And she tells us, when you're in a rut, you have to question everything but your ability to get out of it. And she says, I know it's important to be prepared, but at the start of the process, this type of perfectionism is more like procrastination. You've got to get in there and do. She says, what makes it a ritual is that they do it without questioning the need. And don't drive yourself to the point of being totally spent. Try to stop while you have a few drops left in your tank and use that fuel to build a bridge to the next day. And finally, she says, discipline. Everyone needs it. No explanation required. Amen to that, Twyla. Well, there you go. There's a quick look at The Creative Habit. Learn it and use it for life by Twyla Tharp. If you're feeling it, I think you'll love the book. Hope you enjoyed this note. Look forward to sharing more with you soon. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to www.philosophersnotes.com to download more.